Intro in 3, 2, 1. And welcome to Around the Payload, brought to you by High Noon Productions. As should already be obvious, we do have a new sheriff in town. That's right, I have fired the Blevins for missing too many audio drops and decided to test out my new PC by picking up the mantle of this show to carry it forward into the 2020 season of Overwatch League. If you are new to the show or the network, my name is Deathblow. I will be your host. And fortunately, this show's not about me. It's about the gentleman up in the corners of the screen today. So let's get started with some introductions. In the top left corner, we have Kyle Wynn, co-host of the Blackwatch Report and the enemy of all Crimzo and KSP doubters everywhere, throwing shade at the host immediately out of the gate. Like it, Kyle. Thanks for joining us today. Thank you for filling in. And how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Just finished Blackwatch Report interviews. So now we're doing a back-to-back twofer. I'm ready to go. Let's do this.
Kyle's got all your tier two coverage covered over there at the Blackwatch Report. Make sure you guys check that out. Host number two in the top right corner is Chris the Lobosco. Lobosco, how are you today, my friend? He is a caster and host of Push the Point podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm really glad to be here. It's been a good day so far. I've always liked watching this when I get the opportunity. I was a kid who grew up watching Around the Horn in high school, like literally every day I would come home and watch it. So it's awesome to be on here, actually.
I don't know what you're talking about. The show is nothing like Around the Horn. Moving
not
on.
At all. Not
in
at all.
In the bottom left corner, we have Volumel, esports writer and host on the Tactical Crouch podcast. Also, the most recurring Around the Payload panelist, I say, with no facts and figures to actually back that up. It just feels right, Volumel. Thanks for joining us. How are you today, my friend?
Good. Thank you for having me.
All right. And in the bottom right corner, we have Frito, the first of his name, the untitled, the only man to wrestle with Jeff and survive, the breaker of metas, the undisputed Around the Payload champion of the world. Frito from your Overwatch on YouTube. How are you doing today, my friend? Thank you so much for joining us and writing that excellent, excellent introduction.
I didn't write it. I thought that you just came up with that on the spot. I thought that's how everyone normally refers to me. And what are you talking about?
No one thinks I'm clever enough to come up with something that sounds that good on the spot. But I appreciate your faith in me, and hopefully I can carry on the legacy that you've laid out for me here as we move into the heart of the show. For those of you that don't know, as Lobosco alluded to, this is very, very similar but legally different to Around the Horn on ESPN. We don't get your cease and desist letters because we put a fake address out everywhere. So I'm sorry about that, ESPN. But so we're going to be going through three different rounds. I'm going to be asking questions. Every panelist will answer every question. We'll go around the payload in order so that everybody can weigh in on every single topic. I will assign points seemingly randomly and at my own discretion, just based off the validity of the arguments, whether or not I think you were funny. There's no rules here. It's a lot like whose line is it anyways? The points are all made up and the score doesn't matter. But super, super important because you win the ability to plug your own content at the end of the show. So there's three different rounds. We'll be going through them little different each way, but nothing too crazy. You'll get the gist of it if it's your first time. Really hope you guys like it. Let's get started here and move on into
round one. Capture the objective.
All right. Round one is our longer answers. We've got the big topics here in round one, and we're starting things off in the top left corner here with Kyle. Kyle, you're Dustin in the show notes, by the way. The topic of the day is hero pools. I'm keeping it very broad. I just want to know what you guys think of them, how they affect Overwatch, Overwatch League. What's your take? Kyle, start us off.
So the dev announcement started out super great for me. And we kind of chatted about this before the show, but for people listening, it seems like we're all kind of on the page of like, as soon as Jeff said, hey, we're going to very aggressively and kind of much more carelessly or not with, you know, without worry of disrupting the stability and this kind of nice even keelness of the whole game, we're going to start making drastic changes very frequently as well. I'm like, awesome, perfect, that's good. We're awesome. We're set. I want to see what this is like. I would love to see this in Overwatch League. I want to see what that's like on a, you know, 3 or 2 week change like cycle. That sounds awesome. We have possibly fixed this meta stagnation issue. And then he's like, we've also done another thing as well. I'm like, oh, okay. What? We're also hero pools. Okay. So it's like you have one problem and you want to throw two solutions at it. And maybe there's like 50-50 on team four. They're like, let's do hero pools. Let's just patch more aggressively. And they're like, let's just do both. So we're both happy. And it didn't, like, there was no way to know whether just the frequent and more drastic patching would have fixed the problem, because we've hammered a little nail in with a giant sledgehammer at this point. Like, okay, and hero pools on top of it, which drastically changes the game. It could be a fine idea by itself, but having two of these pretty significant solutions at the same time, it seems like a bit much. I'm still curious to see what is going to come of it. I always wanted less stagnant metas, but it seems like a bit of a drastic measure when it could have been fixed already just by the one thing.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. Let's move along. One thing I forgot to explain to the listeners, that elimination sound you're hearing is not, in fact, the quick play game you forgot to leave when you alt tab to open up the stream. That is me awarding points to the players here and the panelists. So bear with us if you were wondering what that was. Sorry, I should have explained that at the top. But let's move along here. Lobosco, you're up next. What are your thoughts on hero pools?
For hero pools, that is the bigger problem that I have with than the aggressive patching. Like, I think aggressive patching is something that can eventually take care of some of the issues with stagnation and everything else like that. But then you're putting hero pools on top of it. It's more of a question of, if you're looking for some sort of stability like that, you just threw it out the window. Like, there's no hopes at all whatsoever for that. It's like, maybe you get a little bit, but as far as the Overwatch League is concerned, we haven't. It's so weird the way that they worded everything, because it's like, okay, we're putting this in, but maybe we'll take it out. Like, we don't know how. It's not until what was the date? March, I believe, is when it's supposed to come in too. Like, we have this thing that's coming up that we really don't have an idea of how it's going to work. It's just starting to hit the PTR patch now. Like, literally today, they're starting to implement things to see how this is going to go. And we could not even have it by the time that Overwatch League is supposed to have it, based on what they've said in their announcement. So it seems like I think the analogy was good of a sledgehammer into a nail. You don't know how this is going to affect it. Like, sure, it could be great, but you're giving teams so little bit of time to get to know any of these hero pools that they're going to be playing in. I mean, a week-to-week thing is the biggest issue I have with it more than anything else. Like, if you want teams to be able to be practiced and at least look decent on the things that they're going to be running, you should give them a little bit more time than that. Like, the biggest issue I have more than anything else is the fact that it's only going to be a week that you have and a week's notice of knowing when the next change is going to be coming through.
All right, thank you very much. Lobosco, or not Lobosco, Volumel, do you share similar concerns, or do you think that we can expect pro players to be good at video games regardless of prep time here?
I mean, generally, I would say, yeah, I think pro players are just good at video games, but to keep bashing in this idea that the best teams will always adapt is contrived. But hero pools, I'm very hesitant to run with this in general. I'm of the opinion that I think balance changes and regional metas should be able to solve a lot of the problems that this is aimed to solve. I like that Blizzard's given themselves a very casual backdoor by saying, well, if it doesn't work, we'll just get rid of it. But that also makes it very, very strange for your multi-million dollar league to have played matches just like how they did last season on a completely different game. Your teams have been built or been billed something that's not necessarily finished, right? If the idea of Overwatch is constantly changing, was that something that these investors were sold on? I think at every stem of the Overwatch League, and I'll clarify this, I think this could be really cool on ladder. I just don't know if this is ready for league play. I'd love for this to come in at a later date once we have done testing on the PTR or on these experimental cards, to come in mid-season and say, hey, look at all this data. Everything, you know, it's the reviews are glowing. Okay, let's put it in. I'm okay with that. The problem I have isn't that I don't think it won't do anything, and that's a whole nother topic, but it's the fact that nobody really knew what was going on, and it's kind of just sprung on them. I think that's my biggest problem. And then you have devs going on record saying that they'd like the turnaround period for the hero pools to be shorter. I think that's problematic. Granted, again, they've left the door open for things to change, but I am very skeptical. If things are just that malleable, why don't we test them before we just put them into our flagship Overwatch League esports experience? As much as this needs to succeed, I think that we should test things before we just throw them at the wall.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you there. Personally, that's the one aspect that I can't fully get behind. I'm a pretty big fan of them myself, is that we're doing this again, right? This is end of stage three, change to adding in 2-2-2 roll lock. But to take the devil's advocate there, and I promise other panelists, I've got my hands off the points button here for this one. But Valamo, I'm curious, you didn't like that either, adding it in. Did it hurt? Because looking back, I feel like the best team won at the end of the day. And isn't that what we're after? Was there anything sacrificed by that change when you look back?
In terms of the roll lock, yes. I think they have other systems put in place for that not to have happened. Let's say that we had roll lock, much in the same way that we did in season one, for example, right? Let's say that we don't have a double elimination bracket. Let's say there is another giant patch hits that changes the game, and there isn't a double elim. We have shock out of the meta. They lost round one, right? They're gone. So I think there are safe kind of safety measures put in place to that, or for that not to have happened. But with in regards to the hero pool, we are valuing different metrics going into playoffs, right? Playoffs and the mid-stage tournament are going to be played with no hero pools, whereas the regular season, which is how you get there, is being played with hero pools. I think that leaves us open for problems, to say the least.
All right, fair enough. And that's gonna take us on over to Frito to wrap up the hero pool conversation, but I know a lot of us have heard your thoughts already, but why don't you expand a little bit here for our ATP viewers?
I like going last because I get to hear what everyone else says.
It's
and
a nice spot to
argue
be, sure.
And then they can't even respond. That's awesome. So here's the thing. I think, oddly enough, though on paper you would say this is a chaotic change, it's actually odd, like strangely a much more stable change, because what I thought was incredibly unstable and unfair was to have 6 to 12 month spans of a very particular meta and then that hero be irrelevant. So for example, in a more either a ban system or a hero pool system, a hero like Doomfist probably is like niche, but at the end of last season, you basically had to have one to be competitive at all. Whereas in different systems, you can at least control that by whatever metric, either it's by, you literally can't play the same thing week to week. I mean, obviously the playoffs and stuff are going to be different, so that kind of throws a wrench in this argument. But my point is the instability of what heroes you have to be able to master to like master Overwatch was felt really arbitrary to me for long periods of time. Whereas this, it always changes for everyone, so everyone has to be more flexible, and there's not this, ideally, I would say, there won't be this wide gap in performance where you just happen to have a one trick who lucks out in a meta to be able to perform, whereas now they'll at least, you'll know the arrows they can shine, but they can't dominate for long periods. They come in for their meta and then they're out, and then you need to know the rest of the game the rest of the time. So this is a much more full Overwatch solution to me. I would like to see bans eventually, but overall, I think, like, to me, I am not on board with the whole stagnant meta thing, because I actually feel the other way. I'd like to see a stagnant meta that was like awesome, that I liked. But the problem is everyone likes different stuff. So like, how can we all be happy ever if I'm like, hey guys, chill out. Widow Tracer was like really high skills. It's pretty good. But people complain that the tanks didn't get to do much. Well then, okay, let's give you characters that make the tanks do everything now and damage is irrelevant. Well, I hate that, right? So no one's ever going to agree on this. And at least this is a solution that rotates it around. The answer to ranked is kind of wonky, because Jeff selecting them rather than it to be somewhat defined by like the pro meta, which at least makes a bit more sense. There's like parameters around that, which you can point to and based on the strength of those heroes, they'll rotate out. But anyway, I think this is exactly the type of change that would be needed. And I would rather see them do this than wait as long as they did for roll queue. Everyone knew we needed roll queue for years and it took forever to come out. Whereas I feel the Overwatch League wouldn't survive another year without a change like this, for better or for worse. It might be unrefined, but it's the type of step they have to take, the type of risk they have to take. And in fact, a hero ban solution that I wanted is probably less drastic than this. So kudos to them for going big and bold for season 3.
Absolutely. As Jeff said, kind of going into the conversation, or maybe one conversation prior to this, Overwatch had Overwatch problems and it needed an Overwatch solution. And whether this works or it doesn't, they're at least trying to find it. So I think that's a step in the right direction. It shakes things up, gives us something different. Generally speaking, optimistic. The one question I personally have around this, and in Overwatch League specifically, we talked about this in the pre-show, is what is the barrier for making them eligible to be in the pool, to be selected, to be banned out? I think that number is very, very important. And I don't even know that it should be a constant number all the time, but I just think what that number is and what that encompasses makes a very big difference. And this could be a completely toothless, silly exercise that does nothing if that number is too low. And it could be, I don't know exactly what the impacts would be if it was too high. You know, it would just might be exactly what they need for all I know, but I do worry that maybe they're too low on that threshold number, but we'll have to wait and see exactly what it is. And that's going to move us along here to question number 2 of round 1. It means we're going to be starting with Labasco. Curious, how impactful will the schedule changes and external distractions be for the Chinese franchises this season that are dealing with all of the health concerns, it's coronavirus, right? It always feels wrong to say because of the beer, but that is in fact the name of the illness. But yeah, how much do you think this is going to hurt or help, or what is this going to do to the Chinese franchises?
Interestingly enough, coronavirus is sort of a general term that's been adopted for this, but like there are other things that are called coronaviruses. This is just, they got lazy with the naming, I guess, on this one. It is kind of what it is. It's something that is a, obviously for the Chinese franchises, they have gone to such extremes, and it's not really an extreme, but steps to make sure that this doesn't affect their teams, where they're moving their teams. There's not going to be anything in China for a little while. As far as distractions to the franchises themselves, it's a big distraction, of course, because you're losing out on revenue that you would already be having. Now you have to figure out how you're going to make up for those opportunities. There hasn't, as far as I know, been an official announcement of how they're going to change everything perfectly. And I think that's the biggest problem. It sounds like something that they're working on with the league, and maybe that's why we haven't gotten that change. So for the franchise itself, yeah, it's a huge problem because you have a lot of factors that you have to figure out for the teams themselves. I don't think it matters as much. They're in Korea. That's where most of them are going to be. I think all of the teams have said Korea is going to be their home bases. So for them, it's like, okay, we have to worry about being good at the game. Like the team itself isn't as concerned as the actual, the upper management is probably concerned with it, because they just have to play the game. So it's sort of a two-prong thing here for these teams. Like, sure, I'm sure they want to be in China. I'm sure they want to be where they're supposed to be as their home for at least the next 6-8 months or whatever it ends up being for these teams. So I'm sure there's a little bit of frustration with it on the player side. I think it's more on the management side where there's going to be the biggest problems that they have to address and figure out, because this just changed their workload so much for that side of things.
All right. Thank you very much. We're going to move along to Valamel here. Valamel, it's not all bad news, right, for these teams? Is there any benefit? What do they get for the, you know, what is a benefit to this for them is what I'm trying to ask.
I can't think of one off the top of my head, to be completely honest. This is
Shanghai's
pretty
gonna
rough.
Get 2 months off to relax and scrim and
sure. Yes. I mean, for the players, I do think that extra time off could be beneficial, but I think the stress from the, you know, the franchise point of view, from the the logistics of all of this is probably going to weigh down on them, specifically for like Chinese players. I think that their families are going to be in their thoughts. I think this is a very serious problem affecting China, and I think that that will be looming in the back of their minds. And even going into Korea, I think there are cases breaking out there that is another problematic thing. Again, we have the League of Legends scene in Korea not having live audiences. Is that something that the Overwatch League is going to facilitate as well? What is that going to look like? I think logistically as a whole, this is just... I'll say this. I think that Blizzard is doing a good job at handling this as professionally as they can. It is unfortunate. I don't think this is like some sort of death knell. This is affecting everybody that operates in Asia. So this is unfortunate. This is, you know, sad to see. Obviously, with the loss of life and with how important this season for Overwatch League is, especially in Asia. So hopefully things just get sorted out and it isn't a huge impact on the players and on the staff, but I have a feeling that as if it goes to the best possible area and it gets, you know, solved fairly quickly, there's still going to be a lot of tertiary problems in the back of these players' minds, a lot of logistical problems, a lot of pressure put on them that other franchises might not have. So I think this is there's a lot of external distractions to be had.
There's so much information just floating around about it, and so much of it is misinformation, and that's always dangerous. I can't even imagine what it would be like if my family was in the middle of that environment, and it's a very sobering thing to even just think about. And you know, you talked about how important this season is for the league, and how unimportant it is when it stands up next to an issue like what this is. And it's just an impossible situation. I agree. Everybody's kind of doing what they can so far. No way it's a net positive for anybody, but yeah, hopefully they can find ways to get a little value back to, you know what I mean? Get something out of it and not just have it be a complete and total net loss for them. Moving on though, we're going to head on over to, I'm losing track in my notes here, first time issues. We're just going to Frito then. Frito, what are your thoughts on how the whole 2 months off of the Chinese homestands is going to affect the Chinese franchises specifically?
Here's an interesting thing. Oh, the franchises, maybe this is off the mark, but one of the most entertaining Overwatch Twitter feeds, Slasher, was on Yahoo Finance. And an interesting take they had is that although this is bad for going to games, gaming as a whole in China likely gets a boost in the economy because of this, because everyone's staying at home, not going outside, and therefore either can play Overwatch or watch Overwatch. So I think if the games are able to be rescheduled and relocated, the talk has been just the assumption being in Korea, likely I don't think it actually changes much, and in fact maybe helps the Overwatch League viewership wise although the homestands, that's really what we want to see, I think, a lot of us, to see if like how many fans come out and the cheering and everything, but the other end of the coin is that viewership. And as long as there's a lot of viewers, I think the league always has longevity. So I think because we have hero pools, it's not like you're going to reschedule into an unfair meta, because there's unfair metas all the time, right? Like the scheduling of things in general is chaotic and is going to cause mismatches anyway. So perhaps some of these teams get the unlucky draw where they would have preferred the previous patch and it gets pushed on their game scheduled to be on the next patch. But, you know, I that has a far less likelihood of being an outlier when that's a normal thing everyone goes through all the time. So assuming they relocate and reschedule, I think it won't matter too much, but I wonder how it's going to affect the overall picture. Like, I think if they're canceled outright, then that would kind of suck, but I doubt that's going to happen, but who knows?
Yeah, hard to have a league where some teams play 14 games and other teams play 28. It can happen. There's been crazy things in sports that have forced it, but hopefully we don't get there. Kyle, wrap us up. Any final thoughts on the Chinese franchise impact here?
Yeah, I mean, on the topic of just move it to Korea, I think if I was one of the, you know, investors or the owners or management or anyone on any one of those teams, and I just lost however much money they would be making off of the homestands. Like, it's not the most money. It's not like they're making their $30 million back, but still, like, that is a good amount of money that if we just had the Shanghai homestand now in Seoul, like, I would be infuriated as ownership of you know, the Shanghai teams. But as far as, like, how much this will impact the teams, I think it really comes down to, as most of the season does, honestly, it's like, how good is your management? How, like, do you just have one GM who's handling, like, 19 different things? Do you have a bunch of team managers or other people who can also facilitate that move? We saw that Guangzhou Charge literally moved their entire team practice facility in, like, 2 days, which I commend their ability to make such a quick transition after hearing that, you know, they will need to make these moves. Like, something will need to happen. They need to do something.
It takes a week for me to clean my apartment.
Exactly. And so, like, that is the case of, like, they seem to, at least from what I've seen thus far, I don't know too much about the situation. Like, it seems like they're doing a pretty good job of, like, recognizing that they want to make sure that their players stay healthy. And if they do need to travel, at least they're traveling from Korea and they're not, like, stuck in China. Like, there may be issues with people being stuck in there if they've, you know, they can't travel out of there or can't travel to the US. That's, I think, a lot of the responsibility will lie in the team management, and if it's done poorly, the players will very much be affected by it, either physically or at least just emotionally and by lack of sleep and stuff like that. But if the management does what they're supposed to be doing and does it well, then the players will maybe have at worst a very minor change in their play, maybe miss a day or two of practice at most.
Yeah, a lot of really interesting points there. I think specifically that, like, hero pools might actually help ease this transition a little bit, just because you're not going to have, you know, if you have a DPS meta that really suits Shanghai's DPS core or something like that, they don't miss out on that. And it's still so far from the important factor here, but it, as Overwatch League analysts, it's wrong not to take a minute and analyze it. So wanted to make sure we did that. Yeah, and it impacts a lot of things. We really got to start thinking about, you know, fantasy Overwatch League. That's been more increasingly popular as the seasons have gone on, and it all trickles down and affects all of it. It might not be important in the large, you know, the grand scheme of things, but you do still kind of got to analyze it and talk about it, I think, in order for everybody to just be aware of it and recognize when a team handles it well. You know, I think it's going to be important to recognize that at the end, if a Chinese team comes out on top at the end of the season with all that stuff going on, I think there's a little extra credit due to them as a result. But all right, the last question here of round one, as I'm slowly remembering to actually keep changing the camera view that we're looking at mid-show, we're going to be starting things off with Volumel here. And I want to know your guys' 2020 bold prediction for the Overwatch League. Very broad strokes here. It can be about a team, a player, the league as a whole, anything you want. I want a very bold prediction from you guys. Volumel, go ahead and kick us off.
Bold prediction. A Chinese team will be in the grand finals of the Overwatch League, even with the coronavirus and the pressures put on them. I think they have put up a ton they've not only put up a ton of money, and I think that's a credit to Charge and to a point made earlier. Their homestand event location was supposed to be something of quite an astounding piece of work. So not only are they putting up a ton of money, They're signing players. They're doing very well. They're playing within the most difficult region. Yes, you know, the pressures of the coronavirus are going to weigh down upon them. But I think any one of the four Chinese teams are strong enough, especially with hero pools, to brawl their way to the grand finals. I'm not going to say that they'll win, but I think a second place Chinese team is likely, I would say.
Partial credit I'm going to give you on that one, Vom. If you wanted full credit, I needed one team that you were picking. I needed one. We needed you out on that limb. It's a bold prediction. No, you're obviously you're fine. And I love it too. I just called it out a minute ago. I really want to see that. I think that would be a great part of the story, and stories are so much the fun of sports from a spectator point of view. Moving things along here, let's go over to Frito. What do you got for us?
Before I give my answer, I do want to shit talk just slightly. Sure. If you know Volumel at all, narrowing it down to five teams is pretty bold for him, actually. Like I'm a Vamo fan, so I if he's narrowed the gap that much, like, that's super specific coming from him. So I applaud that. But I'll give my half as good answer. I think the people are underselling the power of Fissure on Vancouver Titans, and I think once the season's over, all of the naysaying will look kind of outrageous. Now, not having a backup main tank, okay, fine, probably not a good idea, but I think Fissure's going to look like the star points of
Jay Hong's Winston, bro. There's a backup plan.
Yeah, and the arguments made for him leaving other teams, I think, are a little half-baked, considering most of us, I think, don't agree with the roulette wheel of roster decisions Seoul makes. I would get the heck out of there, too. I don't think that makes too harsh of a criticism against him. And I would be upset, too, if you are more talented, perhaps, than Gesture and couldn't get any playtime on London. So I don't really see, the narrative building. I think it was two happenstance occasions that made him flake out. The Gladiators thing, obviously, it got me. Like, that's probably, let's hope that doesn't happen again. But I think it's going to, I don't think he's the reason they're going to fail. Let's put it that way. I think they have other weaknesses that are going to stand out farther in front of the Fissure issue.
Thank you. I feel like I've been alone on an island talking about how good Fissure is, and that didn't change. I could not possibly, I don't think, agree more with that bold prediction. Moving along, though, Kyle, you are up next, my friend. What do you got for the 2020 bold prediction?
So I got a twofer, basically, and that is, and you can kind of tell by my power rankings, although I might have shifted this a little bit. I have Dallas incredibly low. I have very little faith in the Dallas coaching staff. I think the roster is really good. So I think Dallas and at least specifically, I think Dallas and bottom three, and I think Valiant and top 13. I think people are severely underrating. I mean, this isn't that bold. I don't know. I think people are severely underrating
top 13 for a bold prediction.
Well, it's Valiant, though, dude.
I haven't hit the negative points yet, Kyle. But we just found one, my friend. You're lucky it was a two-parter. God. Go ahead.
But I think Dallas is going to implode this season, and I think Valiant are going to severely overperform or outperform people's expectations. I think people put very much too much stock in, I know this name, and don't look at the coaching staff behind the Valiant, who have had, you know, consistently great turnouts and abilities to turn things around if they don't go the way that they are, as well as there's a lot of really possible high level players, at least two players in the conversation of my rookie of the year talk that we had earlier. So I think Dallas is like absolutely in the crapper, and I think Valiant, I think that they could make the midseason tournament.
I'll give you your point back on that one. Midseason tournament, I like. I'll give you the credit back. And I'm also really glad you went with the coaching staff for the Valiant and why they're going to be good and not one good DPS player that I just haven't bought into yet because I haven't seen him. Because that argument was getting nowhere with me every time I heard it. Like, I've seen how good was Saya player and how bad was Florida. One DPS doesn't get you there. So I'm glad, at least, even if I don't buy into it yet myself. I'm glad. I like the reasoning quite a bit. Labasco, wrap us up on the bold predictions.
So everybody did a team prediction. I'm going to do a league prediction. And my league prediction is that there is going to be a change to the Hero Pool system. I don't know when it's going to come through, but I know there's going to be a change. With everything we've seen previously and how Overwatch League works, with the way that they're willing to make changes within the middle of a season, there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to see something be changed about hero pools, whether it's an addition to how many heroes are banned, the time, there's something that's going to happen. Heck, they might even change it before they even actually implement the system that they're planning to bring in. I think that that's actually has a high possibility of happening too. So my bold prediction is that the league is going to do something like that. I don't see why, from the history of the league, we can't even think that this is a possibility.
All right. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. They're definitely showing a willingness to change, and they outright said it too. I personally would be surprised if it did happen this year, maybe like go to 2 weeks or something like that early. I don't know, but I definitely agree before it's implemented is I think the best time to make a change, right? If they get some testing on it, get some results and go 1 week or, you know, something like that. I think that that could just, it could be great. You know, I don't know. It's so untested and it's so different from what I was expecting that I just feel like I need to see it and get my hands on it before I can really know what's going on there. But all right.
The payload is moving.
That is the end of round one. I'm going to channel my buddy Blevins here and say, man, this is anybody's game. Everybody, this is a very, very close episode of Around the Payload here. At the top, we do have Frito with his excellent fissure points here at 13. Little bit of a lead. Tied at second, we've got Labasco and Valamel at 11 points. And Kyle, just with the mildly not bold enough predictions, coming in 1 point down at 10th place. We love you anyways, Kyle. We are going to move things right along and head into round two.
Round two. Capture the objective.
A little quicker on the questions here in round two. We try to speed up the pace a little bit. We are going to be starting things off with Frito. I want to know, Frito, of all of the week one matchups happening in both Dallas and New York this weekend, which one is the most likely to be a surprise upset?
Yeah, this is tough because I don't think there probably will be any, actually, unless it depends who you are, right? Like I think there's quite a consensus on the power level of most of the teams playing, whether they're at the top, bottom, or kind of, you know, maybe lower third or something. But the only team that I really thought I could pick out to say that there's likely going to surprise you is maybe London, because they do have some playmakers on that roster. Like, there's a lot of no-names too, but when you just take a bunch of no-name Koreans, who knows? They could win contenders tomorrow, right? Like, the variance on that I feel is very high, and I think they have, especially in DPS, I think, especially going up against Paris, some people might, on paper, have ranked Paris above London, but in this match, they may prove that they need their aspiring young roster signings to be eligible to catch wins against teams even as new and green as we might expect London to be.
Yeah, there's so, like, in power rankings, I feel like that's definitely a big upset for London to beat Paris, because power rankings are like, they have Sparkle now, and then people are going to realize how long it's going to take for that kid to show up. But yeah, that one's definitely was a very difficult one to predict earlier. But moving along, we're going to be talking to Kyle. Kyle, what is your week one upset that you got your eye on here?
I think my bold prediction is literally a game in this opening week, which is kind of cool. So that one's kind of a given. But I think Gladiators, I think a lot of people are underrating them because they lost a lot of their great DPS, and a lot of people aren't very high on Birdring, Mir, and Jaru, and are very high on Vancouver. So I think that Gladiators taking Vancouver out in week one would not be a huge surprise to me, as well as kind of the given of... And maybe this is a bit too real, but I still think there's quite a bit of possibility for Valiant taking out Dallas as well. I think Dallas very likely could have a 0-2 weekend in their, you know, first homestand of 2020. And I would love to see it. I would love to see it.
All right. Extra point for bringing up Bob when you were making fun of the Dallas Fuel. Moving along, we are going to be talking to Labasco, who is your week one upset special that you've got your eye on here.
I'm going to have my upset special on the San Francisco Shock, because just because they're the championships, everybody expects them to just completely dominate. It's very easy when you're at the top to get fat and to lose the momentum that you had from before, because it's a long time between winning a championship and the start of the next season. And if there's a team that's very hungry, that has a lot to prove, the Dallas Fuel is at the top of that list, because there's been high expectations on this team for so long that they've never lived up to. So for me, this has upset special written all over it, especially when you consider this is opening week for Dallas at Dallas. This is when you can make that happen.
If I was lacking for boldness in the bold prediction section, I'm getting it here in the upset special. I love it until you said it was Dallas that was going to beat them. And then I got out pretty fast and buying in, but I want you to be right, because I do think it's, this is New York season one, where I'm laughed at for the idea that they might not make it into the grand finals, right? Just because I've seen a ton of sports and I know how playoffs go and things like that. And the narrative on San Francisco is that they're unbeatable, and that's just not going to be the case throughout the course of the season, right? They're very likely to find, especially with hero pools and how things are going to fast, things are going to change. They're going to find metas where they struggle. There's going to be issues. There might be too many cooks in the kitchen with DPS that'll be found now that they're actually playing DPS heroes. Who knows? But definitely like that hot take. And Volumel, upset special time. Who do you got for me, my friend?
I'm going to echo Mr. Wynn here. I'm pretty on record, and I'll have content coming out this Friday, Overwatch League Eve, talking about my predictions on all of the matches, but that's not the time for that. It's Gladiators beating Vancouver. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen in day one. It's going to happen in a very chaotic meta, which we're currently in. A lot of people are doing a lot of different things. There's not a rigid refinement going on, which I think Vancouver has historically been very good at. And when we have historically seen them falter, it's been when, you know, things are not going according to their plan. Can they play their way? Sure. I think they're going to come out with about one or two specific comps and look good on them. But I think Gladiators with their coaching staff, I'm not particularly huge on the roster, but I think if it's going to happen, it's going to happen day one. This early. I think that's probably my biggest chance for upset would be Gladiators in a nail biting, you know, close game. But yeah, I got Gladiators over Vancouver.
All right. I like it. I'm one of those people that I just like, I can't buy into. I'm not out on the Gladiators yet, but I'm just so like Bird Ring. I'm sorry, but I'm so nervous about Bird Ring and the rest of it. It just makes it really hard for me to buy into. Great tank line. I've been a huge fan of their support line forever. They're like my third favorite team, but I can't get myself there. It's been a rough go for Gladiators fans. I think just kind of like make sense of it all and decide what they are. And hopefully this weekend will give them a positive answer that they're looking for here. All right. Kyle, we're back to you here to start things off. We are going to be looking specifically at how hero pools are going to work and what impact it's going to have on rosters that were constructed before we knew about hero pools that were going to be there. A lot of these teams have specialists, and my question for you guys this round is, are specialists more or less valuable in Overwatch League in the new hero pool format? Kyle, lead us off.
I think a lot of people's gut reaction may be up that they're a bit more because you no longer, it seems like maybe the meta maybe figured out. So if a counter to a certain hero is now removed, now that hero becomes super duper strong, having someone who plays that hero is super duper beneficial. But I think it may actually be the opposite. And I think we may find that, yes, your team may have one really good strategy utilizing a specialist coming in, but if the other team runs a completely unheard of thing, you need to be able to have that mid-game adaptability to, if they are running a Bastion, have something that counters that Bastion, or if they are running some sort of other different thing, you need to have that mid-game flexibility, because the chances that you are going into a game and knowing exactly what your opponent is playing, I think is going to be less and less likely as this goes on. So I think having these people who can play the flexible picks and know what those picks are, I think that is the more important thing to have.
All right. We will move along here and head over to Labasco. Specialists more or less valuable in 2020 with hero pools?
I don't think it changes, because I think it's more based on a team and what the hero pools are of the players that you have on your team. So if you're a team that has, you know, a guy like Prophet who can play everything, it's about just making sure you have the right people around him. So if that specific meta that week calls for a certain specialist, well, you've got Prophet on the other side who can play around whatever you have. So I think it's a team driven thing more than anything else, because obviously with a team like Paris Eternal is one that comes to mind. It's like the one guy that you're looking forward to, he's not even there. So you're going to have guys who can play pretty much everything. And then hopefully when Sparkle comes in, he can be the magic that you expect him to be. So for each team, I think it just really depends. Like Philadelphia Fusion, like Now you don't have to worry about somebody playing Doomfist. Say whatever you want about Chimsub, but now you can have your DPS players focusing on those other heroes that are maybe a little bit harder to master that you want them spending more time on, because you know that you have a Doomfist that when he's in the meta, if he's in the meta, you've got a guy who can do it with no issue.
All right, Volumel, you're up.
I don't think this changes much. I think in general, Overwatch has been a game that favors flexibility. Yes, you know, we do still live in the shadow of GOATs, and how backwards that sounds coming from last season. But I think if you look at the season previous to that, and obviously pre Overwatch League era matches, I think generally teams that were built for flexibility, that had very flexible players that could play not only different roles but different heroes and different roles, always found some pretty high success, and I don't expect that to change. I think teams that have built for flexibility and have a deep roster should do well, and hero pools probably play into their favor a little bit more. So I don't think this should swing the needle too heavily in terms of that. People who are built for flexibility are built for success.
All right, hard to argue with that. Frito, anything to add here on this topic?
Yes, I would say I think, although it sounds scary to institute this change under the teams who have drafted their rosters theoretically on a different format, but I think if any team was doing their due diligence, they would have been ready for a radical meta swap at any time anyway. So they already kind of should have been building for this type of thing. And now it's just like a gift wrap surprise that you actually can play with all your toys in your toy chest rather than keep half of them on the shelf for 6 months to a year at a time. But I think when we say specialists, I think most people typically think of damage, which is the more common variant of them, because so many of them are like, they're not, you know, they're meta specific, or they just can't apply to all things. I think damage specialists will still be fine and probably see the same amount of value, but I think being a tank or support specialist likely gets worse, because whereas before the meta would change and then it would be consistent for months, that means, well, we can take out this player and put in another guy, put in our Orisa player, we could put in, you know, our Winston player and be fine. I think more likely what's going to happen, if you see the enemy team running alternate strategies on you, you can't have a tank who's like, oh, I just can't play a Rein, and you need a Rein right now, right? Like, you need to be able to swap to it for this stage of the map. That, I think, might happen more in this format, maybe not to the ideal state where there's constant, you know, comp changes and whatnot. But so to that degree, I think damage specialists will still be able to come in because they frankly don't have that much impact on the game anyway. But I think the idea of having like tank or support specialists is probably just kind of dead, especially if you need a swap mid game.
I don't know that I would have agreed with that on spec before you explained yourself, but you talked me into it, and we're going to have a conversation about that off the air. I want to explore that line of thinking a little more. Yeah. For myself, I think they're no less important, but they're more valuable now. You're like more likely to need them, so you want them to be better. You know what I mean? It's not like just, I don't know, to me, like the chips assigning became sillier, but like having, if your mainstay DPS, I like to look at Houston. So let's look at Houston. Let's say they're starting Dante and Hydration or whatever, right? And then you get to the Widowmaker. You have to have Linkser on your team, right? You can't, if it's the hero pool's forcing you into it, into a meta where everybody's playing it, you have to be able to match that. Then you need to be very aware of what your team can and can't play, and you need to make sure that you can cover that off of your bench if you need to, and you're more likely to need to now. So it's definitely a bit of a balancing act there.
There's only so many roster slots available, though. So if you have too many specialists, then you might be screwed, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to be, you know, like Volumel said, anybody that's built for fluidity and variability like that is built for success, and they're going to be ready to go no matter what comes at them. So, yeah, you need players that are good at a wide variety of heroes, but you need to be very aware of what they can't do, that small list of things they can't play, and then back them up with your bench players. All right, that wraps up that topic. We are going on. We're going to be starting with Labosco here. Who is your preseason favorite for Rookie of the Year in 2020?
This is a tougher question than I thought it was going to be when I saw it on the sheet. I think it got easier once I realized, oh wait, there's hero pools. If you can play everything, you're probably going to be good. And then I was like, you know what? Leave is one of the obvious choices, I think, for this. I mean, the guy is incredible at anything he plays. He is going to be somebody who is going to make Chengdu look really good. Chengdu is going to be able to do things that they weren't able to do previously because he is on the team. So I think the most obvious choice and the easy choice to make is leave, because he is that good of a DPS player and he's going to be able to finally show out in the Overwatch League. So I'm excited to see him. Little special mention to Hawk, though. I just don't know if off tanks are always going to get their due. And, you know, he's a local guy, so I always got to root for the local Chicagoans. So
I don't know if you were watching Valamel when you named the player, but I think he may have died inside when you said the name. So, yeah, 1 point for that. And one point for complimenting my question. Thank you very much. Moving on, Valamel, who do you got for your preseason favorite for Rookie of the Year?
While I, you know, in my own point tally, you know, scoreboard in my own head, I think Lobosco is won the game show for me by picking leave. Sadly, I don't think I'm going to be picking leave. I don't think I'm going to be picking alarm because that's just too obvious. I'm going to go for a long shot here. I'm going to say that Lip for the Shanghai Dragons is going to be a standout Rookie of the Year contestant and end up winning. I think for the majority of hero pools, unless we just get a bad draw and a lot of hit scan is banned, I kind of expect him, and I've heard very, very good things about his hit scan in particular. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. And I think that surprise factor alone, because I don't think anybody's seeing, like, really, really talking about him. Nobody's really seeing him coming. I think that's going to give him a big stonks upgrade. And I think he'll win it. I think he's going to surprise everybody and really make a name for himself.
It's the veteran ATP experience coming through. He knows how much we like hot takes. Frito, who do you got for me? We're giving one more point to Valamel, and then we're back over to Frito for his preseason MVP or Rookie of the Year.
Okay, so it's interesting that many of us have been picking players on teams that I don't think most people would consider a top team. And the unfortunate thing about the Rookie of the Year award that I think is going to bias, as we've seen last year, is that the contenders for it are on top teams, because you look a heck of a lot better as a rookie if your team's dominating, because you farm up stats more and you're winning and your team fight percentage goes up and all your other stats go up. So I think it's pretty tough to gain this award, even if I would agree that the other candidates might be strong selections for whatever reason. But so my guy is going to be Who Are You. Now, Who Are You hasn't played in a while, maybe hasn't looked like his peak Who Are You self in a while, but this is a guy whose career I've watched since day one. What a remarkable story. You don't know how bad you want to see this guy play in the Overwatch League if you haven't seen him before. This is a guy who I would describe as ruining his teammates' careers, okay? This is a guy who carried Fusion University so hard that analysts and coaches don't know what to make of his teammates, because he's so good that other players, they don't have a chance to shine. It's like, The Incredibles, right? With a little boy is running on the track and he's so darn fast. Dad's like, slow down, make it look close. That's what it looked like when Who Are You's on Genji or Doomfist or any of these other carry heroes, and his teammates, Elk, Zachary, Halo, Bernard, all these guys were like, I don't know what they could do, because Who Are You kind of carried that team. And I'm sorry to say, like, they all looked good as a team before, but Who Are You is a sensational talent. And I will asterisk that he's among many more peers at that skill level now, but I don't know, man. When I look at his gameplay, I see something in the way he controls his characters that few players can do. I got an argument with DB about this recently, comparing him to, like, the likes of Haxel. I'm like, you think Haxel's good? You haven't seen nothing yet. Who Are You is sensational. Like, Haxel's good in a team and is great teammate and performs well and wins. Who Are You makes magic happen in clutch scenarios. He's the MVP caliber type player that takes over games mechanically. I sure hope he plays well. Otherwise, I look like an idiot for this big rant. But my picks, Who Are You?
You talked me into his upside a little bit. I've drafted him twice so far in fantasy since we had that conversation, because I don't care if you're wrong. I can just cut him.
I sure hope he plays. Now.
I took him in, like, the 10th round sort of a thing, so I can just drop him if he's not playing and you're wrong. But, yeah, the upside is certainly there. But, Kyle, wrap us up with the rookie of the year conversation.
So Frito definitely hit the nail on the head in that you cannot be, at least I would be very surprised if you had a non-top five team player as rookie of the year. I think that is why I can't in good faith say Glister or Yaki or Gangnam Jin or even KSP or whoever, or even maybe Sparkle. Like, those all are good players, but if you're going to be on a crap team, you cannot solo carry in this game. And then I can't not, I know that there's been some aversion to talk about this guy because, well, he's kind of the obvious one, but like, I want to get everyone back on the page of how good Alarm is. I think that he, and of course this does matter, like if he's stuck on Moira the entire season, it's going to not do well for him. But I think if he's on anything other than Moira for 90% of the season, I think he is absolutely top like three flex support in the league. We knew this almost as a definitive fact last year based off of how ridiculous his performance was. Going to Korea was a bit questionable. There were some issues that they had, but you can't definitively know that that was his fault. But in terms of like consistent, not only great game sense in knowing when to trance or knowing when to ult or knowing when to do this, that, or the other thing, but also his ability to just kill everyone on the entire team on his own, a la Jonak. I think that he is also basically going to be the obvious choice for this, also because Philly has a lot of potential to be a top five team as well. So it may not be the hottest take, but I can bet, you know, a decent amount that I will be that this will be high up there in consideration, if not the MVP.
Very likely to get playtime as well, we would think. Yes. More so than my pick, for example, where there's a lot of options there.
Yeah, definitely the safer selection. And Kyle, don't worry, I pointed you as though you gave a very astute and correct answer that I agree with. I cannot, however, resist trolling you. He's a budget boombox until he proves otherwise. Moving on.
Wait, boombox? No way. Get out of here, man.
I have to troll Kyle. I can't not. All right, Valamel, you're going to wrap up round two by kicking off the next question here. The dream pool, right? The dream hero pool. Who do you want to see locked out in our first ever hero pool that you are beyond ecstatic to
yes.
see enter?
So I'm putting on my positivity cap here. If we're going to do the diversity chaotic, let's ban the meta staples right now. I think the tank has to be Rein. I think one of the two DPS has to be Mei, and then the other one is pretty negligible. I think it could be a McCree. I think that one's going to be pretty difficult to run down, but I think my dream pool is probably Rein, Mei. Let's do McCree.
But you're banning Rein? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, okay. That's my dream pool. I want if we're going to go through the whole, you know, diversity thing, let's get rid of Rein. Let's get rid of Mei. Let's get rid of McCree. Let's get rid of Lucio. That would be my dream pool. That is going to shake up a whole lot of things. I think that people are very comfortable in at the moment. And that's going to really think or really test on how people view the game. Lucio's been a pretty big staple in a lot of different metagames. So if we take him out in particular, I think it's going to change things up.
Would be very curious to see how that played out, though. I wonder if you soft banned Lucio by banning Reinhardt anyways. So maybe it doubled up, but I don't know. And it's going to be random. So that kind of thing can happen. Like complimentary heroes can both go at the same time. Stuff like that will certainly play out that way, but we will have to wait and see. If we ever do actually get that pool, I believe Frito, you are up next.
Yes, and actually, I think the other end of it is more true. Banning Lucio would ban Reinhardt, so if you wanted to kill that, that's what you would do. But
oh yeah,
so
I flipped it. Yeah, good
this,
call.
this conversation, I'm not as much of a fan of as more like practical things that are likely to happen, because then now we're just like in our dream scenario, what gameplay we'd want to see. Because if that's the case, well, let me just ban all the things that I think are boring to watch. Let's ban Orisa. Let's ban Mei. I don't care how strong Reaper is. Let's just ban him too, so I don't have to watch Carpe play a Reaper. Let's just get all of the most interesting characters into the metagame and have fun, because I don't actually care about diversity. I want to see skillful hero interactions. That's it. because like I understand why there's not big diversity in the game, because, well, you look at season one meta, how diverse do you need to be if Tracer can outplay anything with skill and Widow can outplay anything with skill? Fine with me. Just get that sort of thing going back again. I kind of don't care past that. Support wise, we also can take out Moira, and that would be about it. I think that that would be enough to get skill shots all up in there for all the characters and be good to go.
If nobody can watch people play Orisa for long enough, I think we can get people to stop asking me to play it on any map ever in comp. And that should be everyone's goal, I think, going forward with hero pools. All right, that's going to move us along. And Kyle, you are up next on the dream pool convo.
It should be noted that I had Reaper, May, Orisa, Moira typed into this empty Google Chrome tab. And this is the difficult thing, because I totally had that exact same thing. I absolutely despise these four heroes being played because they create the worst spectator experience. I think players also hate all of these four heroes. I've never seen more complaints about Moira from flex supports than I've never seen more complaints about a hero from flex supports than when flex DPS players had to play Brig. And so May as well, incredibly unfun to play against and watch being played. Reaper, same thing. He just kind of runs at things. And there's occasionally some interesting counterplay, but like most of the cool moments that you had with Reaper are a thing of the past. You don't have the Beyblades anymore. You don't have the from the top ropes. I don't even think that the Shaq 6K is a thing that can happen nowadays. I think that those four need to be, or should be, or would be amazing. This is the dream ban. And so those four, for I think more justifiable reasons than Frito, but for the same heroes.
I'm here for the end result of getting those heroes out of the metagame, so I'm completely fine with you doubling up. Labasco, wrap us up. What's your dream hero ban pool?
Well, I'm going to do you one better, because I actually had them written down literally. I don't know if it'll actually get in, but it's going to be backwards. It might be forwards. I don't know how you have the camera, literally the ones that they both just said are what I had written down. Now, the one thing I do want to contest, though, is that slower play actually makes it a more viewable experience for people watching. Like, that is something, like, GOATS was the most viewable thing. I just wanted to contest that, because that's something that actually makes the game easier to actually watch. But I don't want that, okay? I'm one of the people who has to cast that. I don't even want it, okay? So that's why I want the boring heroes gone as well. That's why I want Orisa, why I want Moira. I don't want to see balls bouncing around and randomly killing people who are actually doing something good, but somehow this orb just happened to go right where they are. I don't want to see luck plays like that. I'm cool with luck plays happening, just not that kind of luck play being the thing that happens. People getting slowed and frozen and then stuck, and not just one person, but the entire team, just by holding left click and swinging your mouse as fast as you can, is not a fun thing to watch. So I don't want that in there either. And then Reaper holding left click onto a tank and waiting for the shield to break and then continuing to hold left click onto the tank and killing them is not a fun thing to watch either. So I want fun Overwatch. I want boring heroes gone. So that's why those are the heroes that I picked, which just so happened to be the same as two others. So I guess there's kind of a consensus here.
Jeff, are you listening? Get on it. Get it ready. Plus one to everybody, because you all banned May. So straight away, 4 points are going out there. And we'll give one extra one to Volumel, because his was the only original answer. So I've got to reward that somewhat. I like everything just about all of you said. The only issue I took was Labasco, I think you said GOATS was the best thing to watch in like owl history.
No. Not the best thing to watch, the easiest to watch. Don't call it the best. It was easier to watch because everybody's in one spot. You don't have something happening off screen. That's why it was the easiest to watch. Okay. It doesn't mean it was best.
It was so lame. You could easily watch
you're
it.
You're bringing
exactly.
Me in. Exactly. Feet dry, too. Look at the paint curling down the wall. That's
you're bringing
so easy.
You're bringing me around on it a little bit. Yeah, easy in the sense you could see everybody, but I think it was very, very difficult to fully understand and appreciate what was happening, and in turn enjoy it, as you said, Frito. Like, if you could understand the ridiculousness of the boops on some of the Lucio players and the impact that those had, you could recognize it and understand it. I think Goats was a treat to watch for the majority of it until towards the end, but nobody watching on youtube.com/Overwatch League was able to do that. Even some of us trained people like really had to watch it back 4 times to really see everything that was going on. And that's just not the ideal situation. So, all right, that is the end of round two, gentlemen. There's basically only 2 scores, right? You guys are, there's a tie for first and there's a tie for third. We've got Frito and Valamel at 29 points apiece, and we've got Kyle and Labasco here at 27 points. So everybody is still very much so in striking distance. And remember, you only got to get into the top two to be in the final round. So let's go on to round three here. This is the buy or sell round.
Round three, capture the objective.
So this is quick, rapid fire. These questions are gonna, you know, don't elaborate too much. It's just buy or sell. You should probably say buy or sell. We tend to deduct points if you don't. But yeah, I try to keep it to, you know, 1 or 2 quick sentences here. Frito, we are starting with you, my friend. Buy or sell, Sato can lead the Philly Fusion to a top 3 finish this season.
I'm selling this. However, this is a very particularly wordy question because it's saying, can Sato lead the team? I think they can get there without Sato leading the team because we've seen this team see success with main tank players that outright fed or main tank players that had mediocre performances because this is a DPS-led team. So I'm selling the question specifically, but I don't necessarily agree that it's even required for them to reach high heights, especially if we see peak Carpe as well as many of the other bench swaps that they have pop off when they need to. Which will matter again with hero pools. Like, at some point, we're going to play some skill shot heroes, and these guys are going to click some heads.
I'm not a fan of you blowing the lid off of my leading questions, Frito. Let's go on and talk to Kyle. Kyle, what do you got? Who is...
All right.
Yeah, Sato. Can he
do it? Yes. I think I mean, maybe of the similar vein, I'm going to buy this. So I should make sure I say I buy this question. I think Sato, maybe not necessarily as the leader, but I think he is the... He's not going to destroy this team. I don't think it, you know, what happened last year was entirely his fault. There seems to be inherent team issues. I think that all he needs to do is be pretty good at best, and they can, I think, honestly, they can win Overwatch League or at least get in the grand finals.
If he gets to pretty good, they're going to be an absolutely terrifying team. I just don't know that I've ever seen him there before. Labasco. Sato, are you buying or selling Sato in Overwatch League 2020?
Well, I'm selling it, and it was for the same reasonings as Frito had said, because he's not the one who's going to be leading this team to a top 3 finish. It's going to be everybody else on that roster, specifically the DPS players on the roster. Chipsa is going to be the one who leads them to the promised land, because Doomfist is going to... No, I'm kidding. It's not going to be Chipsa who's the one leading them, but still, the fact remains... They can still be top 3, and it doesn't have to be because of Sato.
I'm just going to start capturing Valamel's camera specifically in a separate file, because I think we can get some pretty good ATP reaction GIFs when Labasco takes him to the brink of trolling him.
takes me to the Chimpsa, and I'm like,
oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. All right, so we're not done here, right? We've still got – did anybody not go in that round?
Valamel.
Valamel. Okay. Go ahead, Valamel. Sorry. Lost track.
This is a buy. Just talked to Christopher not too long ago. The whole team is not upset with him. I think they see the intrinsic values that he has. Is he a standout main tank? I struggle to see that, at least within these last 2 seasons, but I also don't think he's gotten a fair shake. I think in season 1, a 30 game ban did him dirty, and Goats lasting as long as it did also, you know, didn't do him any services. But I will say, if this is not the season, or if this is another pretty poor season for him, I think he's got to go. But I think all signs point to them doing well and Sato having a pretty standout season. So this is a buy for me.
I'm gonna look really silly if the man shows up and is able to play adequate main tank.
To your point, like to everybody's point, there's no reason on paper for us to be excited about Sato, right?
No. And there's no reason on paper for them not to have acquired another option in the event that the guy they doesn't work out. So
100%.
I think everybody's there. It's just whether or not he's an – it's basically the opinions on Philly is Sato an ankle weight?
Yes.
Or is he just the worst player on the roster? So it's not too many people seem pro Sato in that department outside the organization. The kid's got to be doing something right because his coaches like him. He's still got his job. The organization speaks highly of him. The only person I've seen play with him that speaks even remotely negatively is like Neptuno, and even he didn't like call him out or anything like that. He just like called out a comment that was blaming him for all Sato's deaths or something like that on Reddit. Anyways, a bit of a distraction there, but. Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see. They're a very volatile team because we've seen the impact main tank can have on the roster, and we've seen the impact that flex support can have on a roster, and they have like the extremes at both of the extreme positions. So I think they're a really, really interesting team to keep an eye on here. Moving along, though, Kyle, we are starting with you. On this question, are you buying or selling Blizzard's new rapid and mega targeting balance philosophy will be healthy for Overwatch League? Not hero pools, but the balancing philosophy of being quick specifically.
I mean, I had kind of mentioned this in round one that I thought this would have been enough to really bring up the viewership. So I'm going to buy this. I'm going to buy this for a lot too. I think that this philosophy is the way that the game needs to be watched and needs to be played. I think that definitively the best time to watch competitive Overwatch is in the wake of a new patch, or I guess the right when a new patch just hits. I think back to this great couple of weeks of contenders right when they got the patch before Overwatch League did, and there was so many interesting new things being played. So change is great. Often frequent and rapid changes are great, and I think that this is what we needed all along.
All right. Labasco, we are on to you.
I'm selling this one, not because I think that this is a bad philosophy for the Overwatch team to have. I'm selling it because in conjunction with hero pools, it makes it very difficult to know what the actual meta is going to be. It's not like we're going to be seeing in competitive. We're going to be seeing a weekly meta because it's going to be based on what heroes are available. So it's never going to give you a true definition of what the meta is. And that's, I think, where the biggest problem with this is and why I'm selling it. I'm buying the fact that it's going to be good for the league because people are going to see things that they're going to want to see. They're going to be seeing different heroes played, and it's going to be exciting, and people are going to be happy about that. So in that respect, I will buy it. But as far as being something that's healthy for the league, it's not really, because teams are kind of just going to have to play whatever they think is health good for that week. And then once it comes to the playoffs, they're just going to pray that they can find the meta composition before anybody else does.
You used both words. I'm still not sure what the what the answer is, but you're not wrong either. Like it's a definite gray area, and we talked about it earlier. The combination of the two different solutions coming in at one time makes it a whole different conversation, to be honest, than one of them at the same time. It's an interesting point. You got to look at it from multiple perspectives, and the answer was always going to be, no matter what the solution was, was it a net positive, was it a net loss, you couldn't fix Overwatch without giving up something,
right.
And in order to get a different result, you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? Nothing can change, but just make the game better, Forehead. That wasn't how it was going to play out. So
positive for viewership just isn't always going to be positive for the players. That's just more of kind of what it was.
Absolutely. Valamel, what's your take?
This is a buy for me, as backward thinking as it is looking at GOATs and how long that lasted. I think that it was a watershed moment for the balance team to say, hey, we need to really swing the needle a whole lot more and not just tweak minor things. But I also hope that this meta targeting isn't necessarily just nerfing what is meta, but also changing and reevaluating other heroes to try and push them into the fold. Nerf bats aren't very fun, but neither is power creep. So hopefully they find a good balance and just are a little bit more frequent and a little bit more experimentational on number switches and trying to push things to absurdity but then dialing them back, right? I think that's generally should answer and solve a lot of these problems with diversity and strategic choice. I think that this is a good thing, and I would love to see it for an entire season without anything else. Please, thank you, bye.
I can respect that for sure. All right, I think we've got just Frito left here on this topic, right?
Yes, sir. I am going to buy it with an asterisk. I probably could argue the other route, too, if this goes the wrong route. So I'm buying it under the terms that I assume, the things that my friends on this show have already said, is done under a skill-based philosophy. That hasn't been completely clear, because I don't actually like meta rotations, because I was one of the few people that was crying that the sky was falling when we were considering buffing Reaper and May, and oh, sure, it didn't change the meta, so what's the big deal? Oh, and then eventually it comes around that these are heroes that are terrible to play against. I sort of feel the same way right now about D.Va compared to Sigma. Sigma might have lived in an obnoxious meta with double shields, but is way cooler of a character than D.Va, who's like, her aim's not that impressive, and she just silences you, and she's everywhere, and Sigma's a skill shot character, okay? So I want the game to be biased towards that, and the problem is that those aren't all the heroes, so these aren't the same things, right? I don't actually want pure diversity all the time, because that means, well, why doesn't Moira and Reaper and May get a chance? No, they can have the crummy little small sub meta category life that they can live. Stop, don't buff them into overpowered nonsense and ruining the game that way. Hero pools hopefully will do enough where we don't have to completely change the skill curve of the game. I also think with healing going down, playing tank has felt way better. I'm Winston and Ryan, I go in, start hitting a thing, and it could die. Oh my goodness, the game actually moves now. It's so much better. I don't want to see that reversed.
Yeah, they said they're going to target the meta, but that doesn't mean, and I think it might be been assumed by a lot of people, that doesn't mean they're going to be targeting making the PogChamp skill play heroes the ones that are good. It just means they're going to try and level out the pro play to make everything viable. And that, so are we actually improving? Because I think we all, especially in Overwatch League, for me, I like playing DPS, so if I can get on something that's kind of, you know, junk rat, then I can just turn my brain off and lob some projectiles at a choke point. I can have some fun with that, but at the pro level, I always want to see the highest skill cap thing or whatever needs to be there in order to just make the best, most visually appealing show, you know, when the matches are being played. So hopefully we get that, even though that wasn't explicitly stated. All right. We are going to go to Kyle last with this next buy sell here, because we all already know his answer on this one. We're going to give him his moment in the sun anyways, but Labasco, we're starting with you. Buy one, sell one. Crimzo versus Unco.
I'm selling Crimzo and I'm buying Unco. We'll start off with Crimzo. He's Canadian. He's too kind to be a bloodthirsty flex support. And Unco, how can you not pick the man who has been winning tournaments since you were not even born? Come on. You have to go with Unco. It's all just there for you. Go with the man who's always going to win those tournaments.
I just keep giving you points because I think you really upset Kyle and I just can't stop myself. That's enough for me. All right. Valamel, let's go to you. Buy one, sell one, Crimzo versus Unco.
I'm buying Crimzo and selling Unco, as much as that's not going to net me the most points. And I have to wonder if Labasco believes what he says.
You don't have to troll Kyle. I just encourage
him. No, I mean, fair. It depends on how you play the game, right? Are you playing the game? Or are you trying to, you know, be the most true? You know, it is what it is at the end of the day. But Crimzo is somebody who comes in, you know, like Lobosco said, he's Canadian. I think that he's going to fit a little bit more cohesively within this roster. I think he's not going to be a problem child. And at the very least, he's a lateral move in terms of skill. I'm not entirely sold on Unco being washed up just yet. But from these last two seasons, he really has not been a standout player when you compare him to like the Elite Four flex supports in the league. And that's not to say that Crimzo's going to be, but I think he is going to be a better fit for this team. And at the very least, he's added depth. So that's a buy from Crimzo. Or for Crimzo.
Either way, works for me.
All right,
Frito, what is your opinion here? Unco versus Crimzo.
Yeah, luckily for Dallas fans, this is possibly one of the most irrelevant questions to be asking, because this wasn't a problem area for the team at all, because Unko, I think, was either good or fine. So, but due to the state of Dallas's ins, seeing it from their perspective rather than just like a general comparison of the players, I would buy Crimzo and sell Unko because we're in rebuilding phase and at the bottom. Like, if you are one of the top teams and Unko's performing fine and you're winning and you're competitive, maybe you're like, why would we consider shaking this up? We're doing fine. And Unko, maybe on another team, looks that way. Maybe he looks, I don't know, like a Shaz or something on a team that performs better. And I think those guys are probably more similar, but you start to look a lot worse if your team's falling apart and team fights are collapsing. Like, we've all, if you've played support ever, you know that feeling. It's like, well, I guess I just died now and there's nothing for me to do because my other teammates have made mistakes and it's difficult for me to carry from this position. So I don't think Unko's a wash necessarily, but I think Crimzo might be the new hotness. And I wouldn't like say he's on alarm level, but he, you know, some people I think might believe he is, and I don't know if I agree, but at least the upside seems to be higher than Unko. We know what we got with Unko already, and I think this is the time you want to take a risk and try to, you know, a tier jump.
All right, Kyle, why do you like Unko so much?
So Unko, no. I mean, the where I stand on this is pretty self-explanatory. I need to say it for the record. I'm buying Crimzo here. But I think that the reason why is because Crimzo has infinitely more motivation now. He had literally been the most overlooked player. I mean, one of the most overlooked players for like two seasons in a row. And even more so, he did not let them dissuade him. He maintained like next level top of the league performances on multiple different heroes, did everything possible to try to get his name out there. I think he's maybe not on the mechanics level of alarm, but in the terms of game sense, I remember there was a period of time where we kept critiquing or kept trying to find where the bad trance was, or like, where was he too early, too late? He was not. He was always just flawless on the trances. I think Unko, his motivation is to prove he's not washed, which is a little bit of motivation, but Crimzo has to prove that he is worth this. And, you know, he had worked for years to get this recognition. And I think that the internal motivation mixed with his skill is going to make him the definitive better player.
I'll go a little surprising here. I don't normally answer, but I think Crimzo's the right call for the Dallas Fuel here for a lot of the reasons you guys said. As much as I would love to just keep trolling Kyle, it's very fun. He gives Dallas something on their roster that I don't think they had without him, and that's the potential for a true carry player at any position. I don't know. I mean, there's other new DPS players. Yeah, there's other new DPS players that can also do that I think are also there, but they don't, they're just kind of adding another card to their hand that can potentially get them to having something that right now I'm not confident they're going to find.
Another weapon, right? It's another arsenal that they can attack from.
Absolutely. So it feels like absolutely the kind of no-brainer. There's a lot of other Overwatch League teams where you put both of those flex supports on it, and I think Unko is unquestionably the right choice. But just for this situation for Dallas, at least right now, start of the season, how do you not do that and get him out there? You know what you've got in one, you don't know in the other. How long are you going to wait to find out? That's kind of my overall thinking here as we approach week one for a lot of these teams. All right, we've got one more question, gentlemen, and there is 1 point separating first place and last place, so everything is up in the air. We're starting with Volumel, my friend. Will the New York Excelsior be better this year than last year with all the changes they made? The notes say without Mecco, but I mean, obviously you've got to factor in all the additions, the, you know, the new replacement off tanks, the new coaching. Where's the arrow? Is it up or down here for NYXL for you?
So to just make sure I'm playing by the rules, I'm going to sell this. I think the NYXL will probably, I'm probably going to say that they'll probably remain where they are, or maybe dip a little bit below, but not because of their own changes, even though I am skeptical on how much there's talk around them changing their style. And I think that might be they might be a team that starts a little slow, not in week one, because I think their week one opponents are pretty laughable. Sure. But in general, there's a lot of teams that have upgraded quite heavily. I look at the Fusion, I look at Shanghai, I look at Atlanta. They could actually fall down, but not because of their own problems. So I think I'm going to sell this. I still think they'll be within the top five, but it's hard to go higher than third, right?
Definitely true. All right, that brings us over to Frito. Is the arrow up, or are you buying NYXL improved in 2020 or selling?
Yes, I'm buying, and I always struggle a bit when we talk about rankings because we all know they're in the easier division, so it's kind of tricky. They won a lot of games. So to me, I think if you were to rate the quality of games and the wins they had last year compared to maybe even a similar amount of wins this year, they're going to look a lot better. As well, I would argue maybe that the league may have got there's more talent around and less teams to farm, perhaps. That remains to be seen. But I think they're going to look better because Mecco was maybe the slow playstyle rock they played around. If people know their history of LW Blue, they were more like a pop-off DPS team than this. Jonak came in with Overwatch League, right? Like the whole slow play around Jonak thing was a new thing for LW Blue. That's sort of like something I feel they're shedding now that they change their head coach out, as well as get rid of the most defensive off tank that we've ever seen. And though Hotba on paper is a downgrade for sure, I would say like a budget Fury or something, right? Like Hop is a skilled player and makes some mistakes, but he's going to go in there and cause some ruckus. And overall, I think NYXL is going to shed the defensive mindset overall, because I think we've already seen them do that a bit with SBB in there in the playoffs. That's where they finally felt like a competitive Overwatch team to me, where they proved they can make adaptations and play like an active style rather than reactive, right? They were teleporting onto teams and doing things other teams weren't daring to try, and that requires like speed and pace and tempo. And I think Hotba is more the guy that's going to fit in the off-tank role to do that, as well as their DPS players I've already advocated for quite heavily on the show thus far. So
do you like NYXL? Is that a thing?
I think he's all right. Like maybe the most sensational Genji I've ever seen, you know, does things I don't think any player is capable of. But we'll find out. Who knows?
All right. I like it. Let's head over to Kyle. NYXL, better or worse, buy or sell them? I gotta word it correctly.
This is a very difficult one. I'm going to sell this. I think that NYXL are going to be worse than last year. But I don't think it's because of Mecco necessarily. I don't think he was the thing holding this team together. I think this team will always be pretty good, but it seems like there's always going to be, and maybe you just keep changing piece by piece and it still keeps the same thing. It's, you know, with the monkeys climbing the ladder and then getting sprayed by the hose kind of thing. It's, I think no matter what happens, there's still going to be a lot of inherent culture, you know, things with this team. I think taking one player out does not necessarily fix that, but I think that I think it was Volmel who brought it up that whereas most of these teams have upgraded pretty substantially, they picked up Who Are You, who's a pretty okay-ish player, questionably, you know, whether or not he's going to start over Libero. The other two off-tanks, I don't think they're that great. There's just a couple of, like, picks, whereas other teams made huge pickups. So I think they're going to be worse, but I don't think that's Mecco's doing.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around that analogy. There's monkeys and ladders, and we sprayed.
Yeah, so it's, I forget what specifically it is, but you if a monkey climbs this ladder and then you spray him with the hose and then you take him out and put the other one in, or no, it's not the ladder. What the? It's where they do something and then you switch him out and then eventually they realize that if they just tell all the other monkeys to not do a thing, but then the initial one who got sprayed by the hose is not even in the group anymore. I'm absolutely butchering this. Look it up. It's a thing.
I think I know what you're talking about. There's a really good video on YouTube, and you can correct me if I'm wrong if I'm just completely missing it. I'm sorry if I'm hijacking the show.
Sorry, chat. I have to let this go. I'm so fascinated right now.
Probably try to explain it a bit better if Volmel can't, but go ahead, Volmel.
I think you might do this better. A very good video on YouTube that kind of describes this, where a bunch of actors are sitting in a doctor's office, and a random person walks in and there's a buzzer that plays and everybody stands up, so you as an individual feel like you should stand up as well. Now as they rotate out people, everybody becomes inundated through trial and error, but just like the rotation of new actual individuals coming in and all of the actors rotating out, that you stand up at the buzzer and you sit down when the buzzer ends.
Social conditioning.
Yeah, that's that would be the definition. Yeah.
All right.
I still don't know how that applies. Like, I've lost.
My point was that no matter what happens, the inherent culture of NYXL is still in there. If you switch one player out, and then switch another one out, and then eventually it's no longer LW Blue, but because you had it, you know, each player has been inundated for so long that they have bought into the new culture.
Hey,
I posted a link into this chat,
getting there. We're starting to make some sense of it. I think. And I'm going to stop here and let people at Kyle Wynn in Discord.me/HighNoonPodcast hop on in there, ask Kyle what the heck he was talking about, and see if he can explain it. Maybe he'll give you that link. But Labasco, sorry for that interruption there. Hopefully it gave you some time to organize your thoughts and didn't jumble them around like it did mine. Wrap us up here. Are you buying or selling a better New York Excelsior?
I'm buying it. I think that there's a couple of things here that I have a problem with what was said. Like, as far as the culture of New York Excelsior, if you're to say it's to come from anyone, it seems to be Sabe Yowlby. And as far as I know, Sabe Yowlby is still one of the most highly regarded people in the Overwatch League. And I don't think that's something that changes. And as far as somebody like, who are you coming in? The biggest question mark always has been about him is his personality, not his ability to be able to play the game. If there's anybody who's going to be able to integrate somebody like that into the team, it's somebody like Sabe Yowlby. If he can't do it, then nobody can. And that's my thoughts on that. As far as this team as a whole, you still have players like Jonak. You still have Anemo, who's never able to die. You have Jonak, an MVP. Mono at times was considered the best main tank in the league by people. This roster can't be upgraded in certain spots because you technically can't find anybody better. So of course I think this roster can still be as good or even better. If Mecha was the thing holding you back from being more aggressive, which seems to be the case, then having Hotba and Bianca as the stopgap to that, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. I think Hotba is somebody who can do an adequate job, and I think there's a lot of ability in Bianca now that he's, especially with the fact that he's now going to be around a team that's better than any team he's ever been on.
All right. Still thinking a lot about monkeys, but I think I've got it at least enough under control here that we can wrap up round three and announce the two players that will be joining me in the final round to determine the overall winner of the episode. Labasco, I loved your take at the end there. You came in hotter than everybody else. I think you brought up some good points about leadership with pairing SBB with the high upside, maybe problem player. We'll see if it pays off, but if for now at least it bought you a ticket into the final round against Valamel. Kyle and Frito, thank you guys so much for joining us. You've got to stick around and watch the final round. Maybe, I don't remember how Blevins handled them kind of helping decide or whatever, but you guys will break the tie if I can't. Okay, okay, you guys vote, and then if you don't agree, I break the tie.
Maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, I'm making this up.
That's what we're doing now, it's my show. Blevins, get out of here, it's not your thing anymore. You guys are going to pick the winner of the final question round, and if you guys can't agree, I will break the tie. That's how we're going to handle it. The question is, and we're going to flip a coin since you guys had the same number of points for who goes first. Labasco, do you want heads or tails?
We'll go with heads.
It's the huge Overwatch coin from BlizzCon. It came up tails, so Valamel, you're going to be going first. And the question is, who do you think will be the grand finals matchup this year and why? And I want your winner as well.
All right. We're going to set the stage. The Chengdu Hunters.
Sorry.
The Chengdu Hunters coming in. Okay. Now I'm just setting the stage. I'm not saying who's winning. Bear with me. I'm going to wax lyrical here. Okay. The Chengdu Hunters facing the coronavirus, leave 2 years off, facing, you know, not being able to play for, you know, an extraneous amount of time, coming into the league on his debut. He leads the Hunters to the grand finals as the single Chinese team that I mentioned before is my hot, not so hot take. They will be the grand finalists against the defending champions, the San Francisco Shock. And in the upset of the century, we'll say that Chengdu takes a close game seven. Leave pops off, much like Prophet did in the hero pool meta. He can play everything. Same with Jinmu. I think they've answered a lot of the questions. They come from a region that wants to brawl. So if this is chaotic, they should have a leg up. And I think Shock has always looked a little rough around the edges when things get a little tricky. This is a tough ask, but we're shooting for the fences on this one. So I've got the Chengdu Hunters and the San Francisco Shock in the finals, with Chengdu taking a close game 7 and Leaf taking home the MVP.
I like it a lot. It's bold. It's like bold and safe at the same time. Like, I don't know how you have SF in there. They're the obvious favorites. I don't know. I like it. I also don't. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to give too much away because I don't want to inform Lobosco's answer. Lobosco, take it away, my friend.
Well, we do have one team the same that's reaching the grand finals, and that is not the Chengdu Hunters. I'm sorry, Volumel. The San Francisco Shock will be returning to the grand finals. That is something that I think is almost assured. They are still a team that is set a high standard that it's going to be hard for any team but this one to be able to meet, and that is the New York Excelsior. The weaker Atlantic division gives them a much easier schedule, but more than that, more than anything else, this team finally, with the Mecco shackles gone, is going to turn into this aggressive team that we all want to see with the backing of Sabe Olby and Who Are You. And they are going to be able to lead this team finally to the promised land as the champions of the Overwatch League, something that has been eluding them for so long, something that they've been fighting for so hard, and they finally will get their opportunity to do so, and they'll have to slay one of those giant beasts that they couldn't beat before in the San Francisco Shock.
You know Blevins doesn't do the show anymore, right?
Yeah, I know. That's okay. That's still, that's honestly what I think.
No, I hear you. I'm just picking. I'm just used to. I'm just used to the Pander Bears in the final round.
I don't pander.
The Pander meta. Yes. The Pander meta on Around the Payload gets real.
You got to go Toronto. You got to go New York if you want those Pander points.
I did the Unco thing because the copy pasta was there. So
okay.
Volumel won't go into Pander territory anymore with the new host on this show. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, I don't know about Houston. That's that one's rough.
All I ask is that you keep an open mind should they start to exceed your expectations.
Oh, I think they'll do okay. Yeah. Like, off the record, I think they'll do all right.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have them. Anyway, this isn't about Houston. I want to talk about them. It might be my show. Kyle, who do you got? Who won the final round?
I think I gotta go with Bosco here. I think that his argument just made a bit more sense. I love the emotion and the storyline behind what Volumel said, but like, half of a team does not a championship make.
If NYXL is as clutch in the moment as Lobosco was in the final two rounds of this episode, then he might be 1000% correct. How about you, Frito? Do you agree? You giving Lobosco the win, or are you siding with Volumel here?
I like this moment of being in power. Like, I just want to like ruminate in this for like as long as possible, bask in it. I don't like Lobosco's argument of Mecco shackles, because I'm pretty sure he asked for more money and they didn't want to pay it, and he's definitely a better player than Hotba. But it's my logic. I think they'll be more aggressive, so I have to kind of like that on face value. I think I really wanted to side with Volumel, but my problem with the Leave argument is that Leave is a player who had looked, we've only really seen, unless I'm wrong, maybe he's been playing since then, but his peak performance was from a bygone era of Overwatch, so much so that numerous legends have just come and gone. And you might say that about my rookie that I love, Who Are You, but I think he's not like that, and his skills actually have translated over time a lot more. So unfortunately, I don't actually think that's possible, and I think he'll look more pedestrian, as well as just the Chengdu Hunters in general. I don't even think they're the best Chinese team, much less one that's gonna go to the playoffs. So I think they were boosted by being able to play counter meta and won't look as good when everyone's playing similar styles, and we'll see them be more interchangeable. So I'm gonna go with Lobosco. I think
I like that.
Sorry for that long rant. It looked like such a safe answer, and I love bold answers, but I just, maybe it's just too bold for me.
To me, the auto win would have went to whichever of you did not include San Francisco in the finals. I think they're the most likely team percentage wise to get there, but I think it's more likely that they don't get there than it is that they, you know, that they get there, just by how probability works and all the
correct. If you had to pick one team, mathematically speaking, you probably should be picking them, but the likelihood that, you know what I mean, if you look at the whole league, especially since they played a completely different format last year to what everyone's gonna be playing now.
Well, all else I have to say is I think my favorite thing on the night was, you could say that about Who Are You, but I've got the microphone and I'm not going to. might have been my favorite part. But nonetheless, Lebosco, round of applause, gentlemen. Thank you so much. Congratulations. First appearance, first victory. I'll be breaking the crowns out. We're resetting the crown meta, Volumel. I don't know how you feel about that, but I'm going to get a new one. There's not going to be a hideous white background around it anymore. We're gonna get a PNG file. We're really stepping things up technologically here on Around the Payload. So thank you, the four of you guys, so much. I had an absolute blast doing this. So much fun to be in the Blevins chair, right? I promise you, he's been duping us all the whole time. He absolutely had the best job. But it's mine now, and I'm not giving it up. So, again, congratulations to Lebosco. You've got a couple minutes. Plug your shows, your content, your Twitter, anything. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, we're going to start off, you know, they didn't expect us to be here, but here we are as champions. Glad that we finally proved everybody wrong. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do anything like that. But no, it was a lot of fun. I think I should retire now while I've won, have that perfect win percentage, go out on top and say nobody can ever beat me. Maybe that's what I should do. But as far as things that I have going on, actually later tonight, I'm going to be on Rich Rad's broadcast. He has a community tournament of Overwatch going on right now. So if you're somebody who loves Overwatch, wants something to do because you don't have anything to watch, you can go over there. At Lebosco is my Twitter. Please go there. That's where you learn about everything that I'm going to be doing anyways. I've got another tournament coming up that's going to be involving Monkey Bubble. I don't think anything's been officially announced yet, but that will be coming out here pretty soon. So just go to my Twitter and you'll see about that. Push the Point is the podcast that I do with Ramses. Who has Ramses been on here? I don't even know. I don't know if he's had his chance yet.
I think so.
Yeah, he's been on here, so you may have seen him on here previously, but we do a podcast together where we talk all things Overwatch, and it's a lot of fun. We're doing some division previews right now, so any podcaster of your choice, podcatcher of your choice, just type in Push the Point and you'll find us. So thanks again for having me on. It's, you know, I enjoy the fact that I get to do stuff with all these guys, because I always enjoy whenever I get to see all of you, because it's always a fun time usually, so.
Yeah, I don't think me and you've ever been on a broadcast together. So it was great to finally get on a broadcast with you. I know I've done stuff with the other three gentlemen, but nonetheless, thank all three of you as well. Really appreciate it. I'm sure you will see each of these four faces again in another episode. So thanks again to the panelists, the viewers, everybody, to Blevins for paving the road for this show to exist, and for me to be able to take the reins on it and keep it going. Really appreciate it. You can check us out on Twitter at High Noon Podcast. You can join the Discord at Discord or www.discord.me/High Noon Podcast. We'll get you there as well. Thank you guys so much. That's going to be the end of the episode. We will see you guys next time on Around the Payload.
Got his boots and he put on his hat. He threw the coin away that same day. It's in his past and he's not looking back.
What are you doing?
He says, "Final round, now God's my way." He's not good, but he sure ain't bad. He'll make amends for the sins that he has. He says, "I'll change the world one bullet at a time till I find."